Hello and welcome to World Business Report here on the BBC World Service. I'm Rahul Tandon. Coming up on this edition, we'll take a close look at that German economy, the sick man of Europe once again. And could rents in New York be about to become a little bit cheaper?
So a year and a half ago, when I was looking for an apartment within my district, nearly every single apartment that I looked at, I would find it on my own. But the landlord, at least signing, wanted to charge me a broker fee. That's why I came up with this bill, and this impacts hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers.
Remember, you can contact us on WhatsApp or send us a voice note on 0044 330 678 3033. If you are looking to rent in New York, tell us how expensive it is. Now, it is a week since Donald Trump won those US elections, and the ripple effects of that on the global economy are continuing. People trying to work out what he's going to do when he comes to power. We've had another indication on Wednesday because he's picked Elon Musk a role in government cost-cutting as part of his drive to dismantle bureaucracy. Alongside biotech investor Vivek Ramaswamy, the world's richest person, will lead a new department of government efficiency. Here is Elon Musk talking about the ills of government red tape in October this year at a rally in Pittsburgh.
And it's just insane that that the SpaceX team can build a giant rocket faster than the government can move paperwork from one desk to another. This extreme overregulation, where there's just new agencies being created every year, they're all doing the same thing, basically. So anyway, we got to stop this madness.
As I'm sure you remember, Elon Musk took a central role in President Trump's campaign. Here he is on stage at Donald Trump's Madison Square Gardens rally just before the election, speaking to Howard Lutnick, who heads the Trump transition team.
How much do you think we can rip out of this wasted $6.5 trillion Harris Biden budget?
Well, I think we can do at least $2 trillion.
Yeah.
Yes.
$2 trillion.
Your money is being wasted, and the Department of Government Efficiency is going to fix that.
Got lots of cheers there, didn't he? Let's bring in Trish Cruz, a practitioner in residence of political science and public administration at the University of New Haven. Knows U.S. government pretty well. Trish, thanks so much for joining us here on World Business Report. We got there a sense that the U.S. government is big. How big is it?
Well, I mean, it's huge. The bureaucracy is the highest employer of anybody else in the United States. So, you know, you're talking about millions of people employed by the U.S. government. So there's not to say that there's not government waste in there somewhere, but I'm not sure what they're talking about doing is feasible.
Okay, stay with us because we want you to listen to this. We wanted to speak to someone who knew Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And Trevor Trainer is a Californian businessman. He was a donor to the Trump campaign. He was also the former United States ambassador to Austria during Donald Trump's first presidency.
I think it's an excellent match. Elon is a person who is able to do seemingly impossible things. And we're at a situation right now where maybe we need a little bit of impossible.
Can I ask you, when we're looking at government inefficiencies, how inefficient do you think the government is in the US? You have been part of it as an ambassador. Isn't the public sector very different from the private sector?
The public sector is very different than the private sector. But I think we can conclude that there's a lot of wasteful spending and a lot of entrenched interests, and that isn't really in the best interest of the American taxpayer.
When you talk about entrenched interests, some would say appointing a businessman like Elon Musk, who has his own interests, is just another example of that.
Well, I think that Elon is the perfect pick. He's already the world's richest man. What's going to happen that will positively benefit him? I mean, if you want to pick the one person who could think dispassionately about what's good for America rather than himself, why not pick the world's richest man?
Does that mean you will think dispassionately? Because if you are the world's richest man and you have six companies, won't you also be thinking about those companies as well? Just because you have money doesn't mean you don't think about it. You always want more.
No, I think it's very much the opposite. I mean, we're talking about someone who's worth several hundred billion dollars. He doesn't need more money. He's someone who, by the way, was not born in the U.S., but, you know, who came to the U.S. for the promise that it represented. And I think he sees issues with that, that he thinks he alone can fix. And once again, could he not be the most perfect person? I like to use this analogy. America is the country that put a man on the moon. This past year, we were unable to retrieve two of our own astronauts from outer space, right? And that's not the America that a lot of voters and American citizens want to see perpetuate. And yet, at the same time, here's a guy, a dreamer, who caught a falling rocket before it crashed into the ground and is recycling it. That is the kind of vision that we want more of in America.
You were down in Florida, weren't you, as the results came through with Donald Trump and the others? I'm sure.
I was in Florida, yes.
You know Donald Trump. You know Elon Musk as well. What do you think are the areas that they want to target when it comes to those government inefficiencies?
Well, you know, I can speak to you as a former U.S. government official in our State Department. And I mean, I was astonished as a U.S. ambassador at both the bureaucracy and the costs of all these things. I mean, once again, not in the interest of the U.S. taxpayer.
Can you give me examples of what shocked you?
Absolutely. I mean, things that should have been very simple that because of the purchasing bureaucracy of the State Department ended up costing 10 times more than you would think. So remember, I was a business person who served the country as an ambassador. And I think that what happens in the State Department happens in every department of government. And I think now is a great time to sort of do a deep clean and to try and bring back some efficiency.
And do you think Elon Musk, I know that he's working outside the government in this position, but would it be better if he left his business positions, you know, with Tesla, with SpaceX, and just concentrated on this instead?
Well, I think we would be lucky as Americans to get as much of his time as is available. But I also understand that he's a person who has a lot of demands on his time. So I would say whatever we can get would be to the advantage of the United States.
And just on a personal level, would you be keen to get involved with the Trump administration again?
I think if there was a role where I felt like I had something to offer that was of value, I would consider it. You know, I think that the American model is much like what's happening with Elon. Historically, Americans who have something to offer have stepped in, served, offered what they could, and then withdrawn. So I think Elon would be carrying on kind of a wonderful tradition should he do so.
There we go. Trevor Trainer there, who knows Donald Trump and knows Elon Musk pretty well. Let's bring Trish back in here. That point that we hear it a lot on this program from people in the private sector that, hey, the public sector should be as efficient as the private sector. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I think it's fair. And I just think that people don't give government credit for being efficient. You know, I think you obviously, again, you have waste in government, much like anywhere else. But for the most part, our bureaucracy and our government agencies and our government in general works the way it's supposed to. So, you know, I think this claim of total inefficiency in government is just wrong. If that was the case, then things would be falling apart in the United States. These governments, agencies wouldn't be able to do the job that they're supposed to be doing, but we know that they are. So
I don't think they're saying, are they? They're not quite saying that it's all inefficient. They're saying that some of it's inefficient and they feel that they could save money, you know, 6 trillion to 4 trillion. They could cut some of those costs. I suppose the question is it realistic to reduce it by $2 trillion without impacting on services in a huge way?
Well, no. I mean, you can't cut that much money from the government budget and have things operate the way that they're supposed to. You know, and I think it's unrealistic to think that, you know, their whole thing is he's coming in, this new department, which isn't a department. It's a made up fake department.
Have we seen this sort of stuff before?
No, not really. I mean,
under the Reagan administration, did we not have similar attempts to cut government spending?
Well, every administration that comes in attempts to cut waste from government, but the parties want to do it in different ways. So, you know, you see more on the conservative side cutting social programs, education budgets, things like that. And then on the more liberal side, you know, they tend to look at overspending in defense. So every administration wants to do this. They just want to do it differently. And that's why it becomes so difficult to do it. But the way that they've presented this is they've given, you know, Ramaswamy and Musk 2 years under, you know, in Elon Musk's words, to cut $2 trillion from the government budget. And it's just, it's not possible. I mean, you can say it however many times you want, but it's not possible.
Let us see what happens in those 2 years. I'm sure we'll talk to you about it on a number of occasions. But thank you, Tricia, for joining us very much. Let's bring in a familiar voice on the program when we're talking about these sorts of issues, guiding us through them. Susan Schmidt joins us once again. Susan, have you ever seen, I mean, what did the markets make of Elon Musk being so heavily involved with the companies, with the government, sorry, it seems to be good for Teslas, but will there be concerns that he may take his eye off his own businesses?
Well, investors have a little concern over that, but remember that Elon has made some wide sweeping statements and taken some sweeping actions before that haven't been directly relevant to his companies, and investors have gotten used to this. And so there is management in his businesses, and those businesses are assumed by investors to be carrying on even without his direct involvement. They do look at this, and it's typical in some ways of these rather bold statements that Elon has made in the past that he's taking on this role.
Well, you know, a lot of the bold statements, you know, he's done some wonders with certain stuff, hasn't he? That's how he is the world's richest person. But let us see how the next 2 years go. We talked about military spending, didn't we, a little bit earlier? Well, now China is showing off its latest generation of stealth fighter jets and other military hardware at an air show. The People's Liberation Army's new J-35A stealth fighter is being revealed. Stephen McDonnell is at the exhibition.
The PLA now has two different types of stealth fighters as it tries to consolidate its power in this region with, you know, tensions over Taiwan, the South China Sea and the like. There are rocket launchers, there's equipment here to block signals, all manner of drones, you name it. And, of course, apart from projecting military power, apart from showing China's economic might, it also wants to sell some of these. And that's why you've got a lot of ordinary people and even buyers from overseas who've turned up here wanting to see all this latest tech that China has on offer.
Daniel Darling is Director of Military and Defence Markets at Forecast International. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on the programme. You know, China is a big player, isn't it, in the defence industry? How big a player is it becoming?
China is, by this juncture, arguably one of the top two, three arms exporters in the world. It depends on which source you look at, but it's unquestionably grown from a top six, five up to top three, two. And it's especially made that leap in light of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which has benefited China by having Russia's defense industry shift its focus to Russia's ongoing military operation and thus necessitating other countries that are normal Russian markets to look towards somebody else to backfill their own needs. And China is there to do that.
We have talked a lot about what Donald Trump may do when it comes to power. One area that people think may increase is defense spending. And does that mean that we're likely to see China also increase its defense spending?
Yeah, China has normally tracked kind of parallel with its economy. If the economy is growing double digits, China's defense budget grows double digits. Somewhere around 2018, that parallel split and China continued to expand its defense budget double digits. Certainly, if Trump carries through on his promises to increase defense spending, and that probably will happen with the Republicans controlling all the levers of government, then China will undoubtedly continue to increase its own investment. China's defense spending is already very difficult. They put out a top line figure, but that doesn't account for R&D and other elements of government spending that basically go towards defense without being officially defense spending. So I think you can pretty much count on a continued ramp up of Chinese defense investment.
And briefly, if you don't mind, globally, we're talking about US, China here, but if the U.S. pulls back on commitments for Ukraine, will we see Europe also increasing its defense spending?
Yeah, unquestionably. Europe is already increasing its defense spending, perhaps not as fast as some elements of the U.S. political field would like, particularly one Donald Trump. But there's no question that particularly since the outbreak of the war in Ukraine, that the Europeans continue to increased defense spending. Is it enough? NATO spending will allow for pensions to be embedded in top line totals to meet a 2% metric. So those numbers can be skewed a little bit. It ultimately comes down to what are you investing in? How far is your euro or your British pound going? What are you getting a return on that investment? And are you buying capability that will be and a better fighting force that will be sustainable in combat?
Yep. Lots of questions that need to be answered there. Thanks so much for joining us here on World Business Report. Let's bring Susan Schmidt back in. We've seen lots of people, companies, haven't we, benefit from the Trump trade, Bitcoin, one of them, of course, but also defense companies could do well, couldn't they?
Defense companies can do very well in this environment. We have seen a run-up in defense company stocks with the global outbreaks that we've seen, whether it's in Israel, whether it's in Ukraine. And so defense companies have been on the radar for investors for some time already. However, with a Trump presidency, it's largely expected that the U.S. will take a less active role in many of the conflicts. And so certainly countries that are exposed to that are looking at this saying, we need to make sure that our own arsenals, our own defense is built up enough. And we're seeing a lot of that in Europe, particularly where we know that people are concerned. And again, the best protection is having a good defense team there ready to respond, hopefully never to be deployed, but there nonetheless.
Susan, we talked a lot about inflation during the elections. It probably was the dominant issue, the way that prices were going up. We've had some more numbers today. What are they telling us?
We have talked about this a lot, and with the new regime coming in, that could be continuing to be a topic of discussion. Today, we have the Consumer Price Index out, and it showed us that inflation is still something that we need to be focused on, but that it does seem to be trending towards that 2% level. We're not there yet, and so still over that level, 0.3% month-over-month increase, that's over 3% on an annualized basis. That's not where the Fed wants it to be. However, investors are still expecting the Fed to take an additional cut in interest rates in December. They're tempering their expectations for how much the Fed will cut interest rates after that. We need to see this number come down.
We do indeed. You're listening to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Let's head to Europe now and Germany, which is in the midst of a lot of political and economic turmoil. Remember, the Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, sacked his finance minister. We're heading towards elections there. On Wednesday, Mr. Scholz confirmed he would request a vote of confidence in December, paving the way for those elections. He was also presented with a report from his very influential Council of Economic Experts. It's cut the growth forecast in Germany for this year and next. And the trouble, though, that the economy is facing has spread to the council itself. One of its members, Veronica Grimm, is suing the four other members for having adopted transparency rules against her will this year. That case is ongoing, but I spoke to Veronica about the report the committee presented to the chancellor and asked her, what is the state of the economy?
It's a very poor picture. So Germany is in a stagnation and the GDP is still at the level of 2019. So we didn't grow for now 5 years. And this is in contrast to the EU. EU grew by 4% since 2019 and the United States even 12%. So this is really a challenge for the German economy.
It is a challenge for the German economy. Give us an idea, you as an economist who has been looking at that economy so closely, the scale of the challenge that Germany is facing.
So we have structural problems that we have to solve, that the next government has to solve. Industry is doing not good. Capacity utilization is low. Investment is low. And the German exports, which have always been developing more dynamically than world growth, they grow much less than the world GDP.
Do you fear that those challenges may get bigger? We have a new president who will take office in January, President Trump, and he's very keen on putting tariffs on all imports coming in to the US. That would be a big problem for the German economy, wouldn't it?
That would be a big problem if he did so. I mean, we have to wait what he really does. Last time he threatened to do it, but he didn't do it to the extent that he threatened us. And it is not clear yet how the European Union would react. So I think we have to see if he really executes what he has announced.
What about the report that you handed to the Chancellor? Were there recommendations in there? You've eloquently outlined many of the challenges facing the German economy in the last few minutes. Did you give him some answers? What are those answers in that report?
Yeah, I think there are some answers. On the one hand, of course, there's a diagnosis. We look very deeply into the current situation of the German economy, and it's clear that you need structural change. And then, of course, it's not an easy fix that we can recommend, but I think it has to be, the social security systems have to be tackled. Costs of social security systems at the moment increase faster than GDP, and this is, of course, a problem for the room for maneuver for the state in the medium run. And the state is involved in many, many things. So we have a state quota of 50%. So 50% of the euros are running through the hand of the state, and this has to be reduced to maybe a level that we have, that we faced before the crisis at 44% we were in 2019.
Can I ask you a question about the debt brake? Germany has in the constitution, unlike other countries, you cannot borrow a lot of money as many other countries have done, can you, to sort of fund investment. Does that need to change now?
I think it's a difficult situation because Germany cannot borrow, but it has nevertheless a debt ratio of 60% of GDP. Other countries in the European Union, France, Italy, Spain, have a debt ratio of more than 100%. And these countries really need to get down their debt. So at the moment, we have fiscal rules at the EU level that lead to a situation where Germany cannot borrow much. So the EU level rules seem to be stricter even than the German debt brake. And if we break those rules in Germany, then of course France, Italy and Spain will say, if even the Germans cannot comply, then we can't either.
But would it help the German economy to stimulate it if it could borrow more money?
I doubt that it is a solution, because if we do it, then we have an even higher state quota after that. And this cannot be the solution either. I think we have to get into a situation where the state does less and the private economy does more.
We will, of course, continue to look at the problems facing the German economy. Let's end on this story. Rising rental costs have been a challenge facing New Yorkers for many years.
I represent the rent is too damn high party. People are working 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week, and some a third job. Women can't afford to take care of their children, feed their children breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Yep, that is a party that was dealing with rent in about 10 years ago. So could there now be a solution to some of those problems? Well, the New York City Council has passed a bill on Wednesday that will prevent tenants from having to pay fees to brokers hired by landlords. Council member Chi Osei is one of the bill's sponsors. We spoke to him just a few minutes before he went to vote.
In every other city in America, when you're looking for an apartment, if you hire a broker, you pay the broker fee. New York City's different. 9 times out of 10, when you're a tenant looking for an apartment, you'll find an apartment on your own, whether through word of mouth or from a friend. You'll show up to the lease signing and you're forced to pay a broker fee ranging from 15 to 30% of the annual rent to a broker that your landlord hired. And this bill would change that.
Why is that system in New York when it isn't in many other places? It seems strange.
It's certainly strange. And I think that the main answer that I have is what the oil lobby is to Texas politics, the real estate lobby is to New York City. They have a lot of power in the city and they've been able to keep the system in the way that it is for a very long time.
It's going to make a difference if this bill passes, isn't it? But
absolutely.
But how much of a difference? Because rents are huge in New York. This is part of the problem, but some would say only a small part of it.
Of course. So the average cost for a tenant to move into a new apartment in New York City is over $12,000. With the passing of this bill, it would eliminate the broker fee from being forced onto a tenant. And the broker fee is over half of that one-time payment. So this would be eliminating that upfront cost of over $6,000 for many tenants when looking for an apartment.
Why does your mayor, Mr. Adams, who is a Democrat, say the bill has the right intention, but sometimes good intentions do not get the results you're looking for? He says, actually, this bill could have the reverse effect.
Yeah, so not all Democrats are the same here in the city of New York or in the United States in general. Mayor Adams, compared to an individual like me, accepts thousands of dollars from the real estate lobby. You know, that point that he made is a real estate talking point. You know, he's bought by the lobby, and that's why he is spewing those remarks.
Can I ask you about you? You are quite young. Remind us of how old you are.
I'm 26.
Give us your experience of trying to get somewhere to rent in New York.
Yeah, so a year and a half ago when I was looking for an apartment within my district, nearly every single apartment that I looked at, I would find it on my own. Sometimes would show up and there wouldn't be a broker there. But the landlord, at least signing, wanted to charge me a broker fee. That's why I came up with this bill, and this impacts hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers.
Kiosk say that, Susan, high rent's a problem in Chicago, I imagine.
High rents are a problem throughout the country. We talked about that consumer price index earlier. 30% of that is influenced by rent costs, and that's one of the reasons that that's still coming in above the levels the Fed would like.
Susan, as always, a pleasure having you here on World Business Report and guiding us through some of those stories. We're going to be back with Business Matters in a couple of hours' time from now. We're going to be continuing our discussions. How is Elon Musk going to make that government in the US more efficient? And we're going to be taking a close look at COP and hear from somebody in the private sector who's dealt with green financing.